Dr. Kerr, do you blame Governor Regan for your dismissal as president of the University of California?
No, I would say not basically. He was a factor. His campaign was a factor. But there's more to it than that.
From CBS Washington, Face the Nation, a spontaneous and unrehearsed news interview with Clark Kerr, former president of the University of California. Dr. Kerr will be questioned by CBS News correspondent George Herman, Joseph M. Russin, education editor of Newsweek magazine. To lead the questioning, here is CBS News correspondent Martin Nagronsky.
Well, you say your dismissal, there is more to it than Governor Regan or politics, presumably. What more?
Well, you know, I've been a chancellor, president of the University of California for 14 and a half years. And it's been a period of very great growth and change for the University of California. And I was involved in making a great many difficult decisions. And so over a period of time, I built up a certain burden of history. It's also true that with the nature of the California electorate, that there is rather greater strength on the far left and also on the far right than perhaps any other state of the nation. And the university in general, and I in particular, came to be a focus of some of their conflict. Now, the governor and his campaign reflected some of this and in his actions, but it was perhaps a more fundamental phenomenon than the actions of any single governor or gubernatorial candidate.
Well, it was, of course, the actions of the regents which eventually led to your dismissal. Do you feel that the regents, or the majority of the regents, are now aligned firmly with the right wing of the state and can be expected to continue to act that way?
Well, of the 14 regents who voted, different ones voted for different reasons. Certainly there was a coalition around the new governor and his point of view. But I wouldn't think that all the regents necessarily on every issue would remain members of this coalition.
There's a certain spectrum of opinion as to how the final action was precipitated. Mm-hmm. You have denied that you asked for a vote of confidence, some have asserted, and there's a middle ground that says that you thought this might be a good time and mm-hmm. that there was not exactly a demand for a vote of confidence, but some kind of a request that this might be the time to act. Could you straighten it out for us? What actually happened?
Well, actually, I was a rather minor aspect of all of it, and I don't know how far a person gets going into who did what and when. But I do realize there is some concern about just this one aspect of what happened. Let me say to begin with that Governor Regan was certainly much involved in what happened. He made the university a very major issue beginning with his primary campaign and raised a great many questions in the minds of people of the state. He kept on his criticisms of the university, his assurances that there'd be a basic investigation of it after he was elected. And he did meet with the regents just before the regents meeting and talked with them about my situation. There is this question still in people's minds as why January rather than February. And I think it's quite clear that there was some thought given by the new governor and people close to him to acting in February rather than January. This was said before the action. It's been said since then. So I think that there may have been some preference by the new governor for February, but it couldn't have been a strong preference. If it had been a strong preference for February rather than January, the regent he had just appointed, Alan Grant, wouldn't have been the person first to make the motion for my dismissal. Also, if the governor had really been determined to wait a month, he could have asked as a matter of personal privilege to hold it a month. He could have made a motion to lay it on the table for a month, or certainly he and the lieutenant governor and the new regent appointed by him could just have abstained, and then it wouldn't have happened in January. Now, just as they were thinking, as between January and February, as I heard reports from Sacramento and read in the newspapers from correspondents about this discussion, would it be January or February, I began thinking about the problem too. And I became concerned about what would happen between January and February if what was by then inevitable was postponed a month. And so I did talk with the chairman of the board and the vice chairman of the board briefly before the meeting on Friday. And I said to them that I wasn't talking about myself. I was prepared for any eventuality. I was prepared to serve the university for another day or another month or another year forever. I was devoted to the university. But if the regents were going to be talking about my situation, and if it got down to a question of January or February, I thought they might want to give consideration to these two points. I said that I'd been through many negotiations in my life, including for the university, and the negotiations now coming up about this almost incredible budget cut were going to be the most important negotiations since the master plan 7 years ago, in which I worked very instrumentally. And that I wondered whether or not the university could be well represented during the month between January and February, if the people with whom we were to be negotiating knew that there was only 1 month longer, had in effect, as I said, planted a time bomb to go off on February 15th. Would this be effective for the university? Could the university be well represented under those circumstances? I said, second, just technically, that these negotiations within the university over severe budget cuts and outside might take 5 or 6 months. And to get somebody in the middle of that process for 1 month and then pull them out just technically wouldn't be really feasible. So I said if they were going to talk about the problem, and if it was between January and February, I thought from the point of view of the university, not my point of view, the point of view of the university, they should give some consideration. Was the university better served by February than January? And I thought a case could be made for January.
You leave the issue.
I might say that this is about as far from asking for a vote of confidence as you can possibly imagine. And the chairman of the board at the press conference after the meeting said that the matter came up because certain regions wanted to discuss it. He told me just before the discussion took place that he couldn't take any more business, which I at that point wanted to present very urgently, because certain regents had asked for the chance to discuss the matter, and he promised it to them.
You leave the impression that, insofar as timing is concerned at least, the primary issue was the budget. Was that the primary issue overall, do you believe?
No, I don't think it was the primary issue overall. I was concerned in terms of negotiations whether January or February is better from the point of view of the university. Overall, the problem was that the university had been made a very big issue in the political campaign and afterward. And the budget then came in to intensify this. A fiscal aspect was added to the political aspect, which already existed.
Now, the political aspect, you make it very clear that the moment Governor Regan was elected, you'd had it.
Yes, I came very close to having had it at that point, yes.
Then you feel then your dismissal was political.
Well, I said before, there was more to it than that, but essentially it was political.
Yeah. In other words, had Governor Brown been reelected, you would presumably still be president.
I think that's quite likely. The governor brought in 3 new votes. He had very complete control over 2 or 3 more. And I think there's some real proof that it was political, if I could just give it to you. The California poll came out, the so-called field poll, this last week.
Yes.
This poll had been taken also back in April 1965. And this was really that's sort of the low point for the university. We'd been through the troubles of the fall of 1964. We just had the so-called filthy speech movement, which wasn't much of a movement, involved 9 people, including 3 students. It was a low point for the university, and the field poll then asked people, did they disapprove of the students, did they disapprove of the faculty, of the regents, or of President Kerr? And the poll showed great disapproval for the students. It showed some disapproval both for the faculty and for the regents, and very minor disapproval for the president of the university. Showed 14% of the people disapproving. Now, that didn't mean they disapproved enough to see me dismissed. Since April 1965, a lot of good things have happened to the university. We got better student rules. We got an excellent chancellor at Berkeley. We made progress in the planning for the future, reorganization of the university, growth plans, etc. Even the student troubles of December 1966 were handled to the satisfaction of the people of the state, and every editorial I saw in the state was in favor. What happened then? So that the poll which was taken and released just this last week showed 34% of the people supporting Governor Regan in the dismissal. It wasn't what was happening within the university. It was a great political campaign. The governor kept the issue of the University of California before the people throughout the campaign. He made some exaggerated statements about the university. And as a consequence, rather than having the 14% disapproval go down as time went on and constructive actions took place, this was raised to the point where 34% say they would favor the dismissal. And this can only be because of the constant political attacks.
Dr. Kerr, you're making it very clear that you believe that the election of Governor Regan is going to be detrimental to the future of the University of California. Do you believe that?
Well, the governor has a budget, which at best would drastically cut the University of California's support. The Regents asked for some $278 million. And this was a very responsible budget. And the governor is proposing state funds. We were asking for state funds at 278, having had a little over 240 this year. Is proposing the cutting of state funds to $192 million. I do not know of any case in the whole history of the United States where any governor has proposed such a cut, particularly during a period of high prosperity.
Can any university be great if it's subject to political whims, if its budget is subject to the political ups and downs of the state, and if its officers and its presidents are subject to the changes of the political climate? Can it grow great in the long run?
A university lives and prospers on many things. But above all, it needs some autonomy and some freedom. It also needs money. And both are now being challenged.
With these things in doubt, would you agree with the statement of the Berkeley Division of the Academic Senate a couple of weeks ago when they said that, quote, no reputable educator would assume the presidency of that university which yesterday was the envy of every other state, referring, of course, to University of California. Do you think that's a fair judgment of the situation?
I hope it isn't true. I've for a long time been a faculty member of the University of California and administrator. I'm greatly devoted to the university, and I think the problems of the university are rather short run. I have the greatest confidence in the long run future of the University of California. There are difficult times at the moment.
Well, if the budget cuts, go ahead.
I was going to follow this for a moment and ask if you thought the regents and the faculty should look outside the state for a new president, someone who might not be wrapped up in the current political situation, or do you think there are people inside that they should turn to?
Well, you know, that's really their problem, not mine anymore. I would hope they'd look for the best man available any place in the United States, and I'm sure they will.
And you think they can get him?
I would think under the circumstances that it will take some persuading.
Your comment about the things that a university needs, and it, of course, includes money. The state director of finance, Gordon Smith, says that tuitionless education is now obsolete in California. Is that a legitimate answer to the finance problem for the university?
Well, it isn't obsolete yet. He may make it obsolete.
But as a concept, is it obsolete?
Through the century-long history of the University of California, we haven't had tuition. The new administration says that we should.
Do you think you should?
No, I don't think so.
That's the point I'm trying to make. Is the lack of tuition one of the problems? Some people have blamed some of the disorders on the fact that there is no tuition.
Putting tuition on isn't going to solve the fiscal problem, and the new governor doesn't suggest it will. It'll help solve it to an extent. But there's still a great many people who can't afford to get a university education. We tell students they have to be prepared to spend $1,750 a year for board and room and books and laundry and so forth already. Now, you add $400 on top of that, and some students aren't going to be able to make it. And those who do are going to have to spend more time working. Remember that a quarter of our students are fully self-supporting, and three-fourths of them are partially or fully self-supporting. They're going to have to spend more of their time working and less of their time studying. And I've also been concerned that if you once open up tuition, it's an easy out to any governor or legislature trying to balance the budget. Now, originally, Governor Reagan said that half the money from tuition would go to scholarships. When his budget finally came out, it wasn't one half, it was one sixth. And so you can always cut into the scholarship proportion of it, and you can always raise it. And I think that's rather dangerous.
Dr. Kerr, Mr. Herman raised a point that you rather bypassed, and that was the effect of political influence on the University of California, or on any university. Mm-hmm. Do you feel that politics do play too strong a role in the administration of the University of California, or on any land-grant university of that nature? Do you think anything can
be done about it? I think politics does, and it's been very interesting. Since my dismissal, the lieutenant governor, who is a Republican, and the Speaker of the Assembly, who's a Democrat, both of whom are regents, have stated publicly that they have been concerned with the intrusion of politics into the University of California, and they both think that neither the lieutenant governor nor the Speaker of the Assembly should be on the Board of Regents.
Along those lines, would you suggest other changes or feel other changes in the Board of Regents are necessary? As you know, most of the appointed regents now generally are appointed for after they've had a successful business career. The state superintendent of public instruction, Mr. Rafferty, said he favors putting a student on the board, and as you know, many people in the university would like to see some sort of student or faculty representation. Do you think that would help?
Well, I share the doubts of Lieutenant Governor Finch and Speaker Unruh about having politically elected people on the Board of Regents. I do also think it would be helpful if there was some way of getting a panel of names of people who had shown great interest in education and some knowledge and understanding of it before governors made appointments. Now, in California, the Bar Association helps screen judges before they're appointed to say that they are really competent. And I wish there was some way so that there could be an outside advisory panel, perhaps made up of the president of Stanford University, the president of Caltech, the president of USC, or anyway. So you could get a list of people that were really devoted to higher education, and then within this list, the governor would make his appointments.
Are you implying that some members of the current regents are not really devoted to higher education?
Oh, I think that most of the members of the board are devoted to the university. They're conscientious about it. I would say that certainly some of them, this is just a matter of fact, have had no prior interest or experience with higher education before they become regents. Of course, one of the problems is to increase their interest and understanding after they're regents.
Dr. Kerr, you were constantly criticized by Governor Reagan throughout his campaign, and there was an enormous amount of talk about this all over the country, mm-hmm. that at the University of Berkeley, students had abused freedom of speech, mm-hmm. that it was license rather than freedom that had been allowed to them, that they had really gone too far, mm-hmm. and that you should have been more rigid in controlling demonstrations and in permitting them access to the campus and all the things that went on there over those years. Mm-hmm. Do you feel, looking back now, that you were too lax?
No, I don't. I don't really think so, by and large. Remember, to begin with, that there are 9 campuses of the University of California, and that I was president of the whole university, that there's always been a chancellor at Berkeley with the major concern for the campus. There were excesses by the students at Berkeley, and I greatly regret them. I think the problem at Berkeley was more that there was too heavy a hand than that there was too light a hand. I think the chancellor at Berkeley in October of 1964 moved too quickly in bringing in massive police force. I did step in to try to turn it from discussions rather than use of the police. I do think that too quickly the governor in December 1964 brought in the police. I wish there had been more time to talk to the students and to persuade them. And I would make this note. As compared with the heavy hand used at the University of California, it wasn't the light hand that caused the real trouble, it was the heavy hand and the reaction to the heavy hand. To point out that Wisconsin last year, they had 2 sit-in strikes totaling 8 days involving 1,000 students. The police weren't brought in, and the students, you know, weren't dismissed from the university. For a week, the president of the University of Chicago couldn't use his own administration building. There was no heavy hand there, or at Michigan, or at Cornell, or at CCNY or elsewhere, where they tried persuasion, which is what I favored. The problem was dispensed with rather quickly, peacefully, without all the historical negative aspects that we got at the University of California. So I would say that the problem at the University of California was not that the hand had been too light, but that the hand had been too heavy. And I don't mean to say that there aren't occasions to use the police. There are. I don't mean to say that there weren't excesses. There were. but in a university of all places, the first resort should be to reason and persuasion and not to police force.
You took a trip recently to South Vietnam, and when you came back, you said that since it was on students' minds, you thought you ought to see what it was all about and have a look.
Yes.
You've had a look. Do you agree with many of the student positions against Vietnam?
Well, you know, that's a very long story. I only had a week in Vietnam, and you can't become an expert on it. I think it'd really be dreadful to go in with the massive force of the great bomb to try to settle that problem. I also think for the United States to just, you know, pull out would also be a tragedy. There'd be massacres really all over the place. And I think that we're faced now with the possibility of negotiations, which I just fervently hope can come into being.
Fundamentally, you seem to be supporting then the government position.
I'm doubtful, very doubtful about the bombing of North Vietnam. And I'm very doubtful also about the bombing of the hamlets. I just don't think, however, that we can pull all the way out. Mm-hmm. And I agree with the administration, and I think the administration ought to push as hard as it possibly can for negotiations.
Some students, as you know, claim the university, not only the University of California, but others, actively contribute to a government policy such as the war in Vietnam when they undertake secret research for that war or undertake other forms of research that helps the war. Do you think universities should actively oppose the war or other such policies when they have criticisms of it?
You know, I don't really think that the university as a university should have a position on the war in Vietnam. Now, the University of California carries on a great deal of research, adding to the knowledge of the world. Some of this knowledge is used for one purpose and some for another. But in the whole University of California, there's really almost no research of a secret nature, almost none.
Do you have any lingering long-range worry about what the impact on universities may be of these millions of federal dollars for specialized research?
Yes, I have some concerns about this. I think it's the federal money has been well spent on research. And that the universities, no university has been forced to take any federal money. We've taken it because we also wanted it, aside from serving a national purpose. I do think that over the last 20 years, however, that all the federal research money has tended to draw the attention of faculty members away from undergraduates toward graduate students and research, and the pendulum needs to be pushed back in the direction of the undergraduate. That's very badly needed. Now, this consequence for the undergraduate, nobody, you know, intended it. But it just happened, and many of us regret it.
Well, gentlemen, I sincerely regret that our time is up, and thank you very much, Dr. Kerr, for being here to Face the Nation.
Today on Face the Nation, Clark Kerr, former president of the University of California, was interviewed by CBS News correspondent George Herman, Joseph M. Russin, education editor of Newsweek magazine. CBS News correspondent Martin Nagronsky led the questioning. Face the Nation originated from CBS Washington and was edited to conform to time requirements.